This is Lawrence Tuning, and these are my 88 friends.
Me and my 88 friends. Me and my 88 friends. I will sing you a song that will help me along. They're my one man band. I'm the number one fan. Me
and my. Welcome to another episode of Me and My 88 Friends. This is Lawrence Tuning, your host. I'm calling this episode, It Used to Be a Laundromat. I'll explain the title later. But I want to start with a song called I Don't Want to Keep You Hid. I wrote this back in the 80s. My current band, Damascus Road, and I blew the cobwebs and the dust off of the song and redid it a few months ago. But let's start with this one, I Don't Want to Keep You Hid.
Sell them ever.
Last week's episode of our podcast was called The Little Green House on Fifth Street. It had to do with a Christian coffeehouse ministry in Anderson, Indiana that began in a vacant house. And many people came to the Lord through that ministry. Coffeehouses were springing up all over the country in the early 1970s as part of a national revival among young people called the Jesus Movement. I've sung in many of those coffeehouses all over the country. In today's episode, I want to highlight one more coffeehouse, which was very, very effective in the New England states. This was called Turning Point, and it was in the town of Andover, Massachusetts. Turning Point was started by a couple named Bill and Sandy Watson, who lived a very busy life. Bill was an executive for Western Electric. They had six children, school-aged kids in their home, but they still wanted to reach more people. And so with some other businessmen, they opened up a storefront downtown Andover and turned it into a Christian coffee house. They called it Turning Point. I had a wonderful week with them in 1973, where we stayed in their home, got to know their kids, and sang at that coffee. We sang more than once there. But wonderful, wonderful people. I want to start this show with a conversation I had with their son, Jim Watson, who was the fourth of six kids. And Jim is a pastor now in Covington, Georgia, at a church called Salt and Light Christian Church. Join Jim and I as we reminisce. This is midway through our conversation. The reason I've got you on here today, and I'm going to have you on again later because you've written a book and you've got a very interesting life on your own, but I want to talk to you about your family, particularly your mom and dad, and the ministry they started on the streets of Andover, Massachusetts. Let me just say, your mom and dad are some of my favorite people, and they had six children, and you're number four.
Yes, that's correct.
And one of my fondest memories was back in around 1973 when we came to your folks' house and stayed. I was with the Fishermen, a music group called the Fishermen. We stayed, I think, for a week at your house and ministered at a place that your dad started right on the streets called Turning Point. That was a vivid memory and that stayed with me all these years. Do you remember much about that visit and much about our time together?
Oh, I definitely remember the visit. I remember you guys. I remember the Fishermen very fondly. Yeah, so actually I have a good memory of that and of Turning Point. That's I think sits with all my brothers and sisters. We remember that time very much.
So tell me a little bit about your mom and dad. Your dad is Bill. Your mom, Sandy, is in heaven now. What a great lady yes. She was. But your mom and dad, I mean, your dad was an executive at Western Electric.
Yep.
Very successful. But he got this idea to start a storefront ministry called Turning Point. And can you tell me just a little bit about Turning Point? We're going to interview our mutual friend, Barry Noonan, who came to Turning Point as a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
But can you tell me a little bit about Turning Point and how your dad got the vision to do that?
It's interesting. My father and mother are always active in the church since we were born. And I always joke that I never saw my dad watching TV because he's always busy, at work, doing God's work, stuff like that. So they were very impressive how much they wanted to help people. And we were at the time attending a Plymouth Brethren Church, Andover Bible Chapel. And his Sunday school had a few kids. Well, it kept growing. And my guy named Larry would bring kids. He went to my dad and said, if I bring them, can you teach them? And my dad said, yeah, I can. And Larry would just come in with all these kids. He later on would marry my sister and become my brother-in-law. And he would bring all these youth in who just weren't searching for Christ. And my dad's his Sunday school group just grew. And it was amazing. And there was kids from tough areas of life, some who are, you know, had issues with, you know, substances or rough families. And this group just grew. And the church was actually, remember, this is like the early 70s, were uncomfortable with the group that was coming in. I mean, they had never seen anything like this.
And
I mean, this is, you know, it was different. And I didn't find out till late, like decades later, that they asked my father if he could leave because of all these people he was bringing in. But when my dad, I found my mom and dad had this idea. We're reaching kids. We want to keep reaching these youth and young adults. No, we're going to keep reaching them. And out of that came the idea of Turning Point, you know, Coffee House. And but the church had asked them to leave, said, we'll help sponsor this. And so I found a lot of this information like decades later that they actually were one of the sponsors of it and would give my dad funding.
So we'll pay you. We'll
pay you to leave.
We'll pay you if you will leave and take these kids with you.
It's with you. And so he did that. But I tell you, it was mainly Saturday was the big day, and it was packed every Saturday.
Yeah.
You know, different musicians like the Fishermen would come through and it just would pack in. And then it wasn't just there. My parents then would like have studies at our house. We always, the joke was they had six children, but we always seemed like we had 10 or 20 because there's always young adults in our house that my parents were ministering to, helping out. Some would live with us for short periods of time and so forth, all through this ministry of Turning Point. It was really, they touched a lot of lives.
Well, your parents were trailblazers, and yeah. I did a thing on the podcast last week about the rise of coffee houses, and we talked about one in Indiana. But I wanted to highlight this one, and what an interesting story. And I remember how busy that place was and people coming in and out. And, you know, Andover is probably the most famous person from Andover. Tell me if I'm wrong. Is Jay Leno. He was from Andover.
Yes.
And I remember Turning Point was right down the street from Friendly's Ice Cream. And I always wondered if Jay Leno ever wandered into that place. You never know.
I don't think so, but who knows? You know?
Yeah.
But yeah, it was right next to Friendly's, because a lot of times after Turning Point, we'd go over to Friendly's. over there.
I remember, Jim, that one night when we were singing there, and I think we came several times, but I do remember that one week we stayed at your house all week. In the middle of our set, we were singing. There was a guy who pulled out a harmonica and began playing it with us, which was all right.
Yeah.
But then I stopped and I started talking about Jesus, and I think I started talking about repentance. And this guy went ballistic. I don't know if you were there that night, but he began yelling and he kicked over his chair and made a big scene and slammed the door and left. And I thought, wow, this was not 1973. Years later, probably 10 years later, I had moved to Marlboro, Massachusetts.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was pastoring a church there, and we had an outdoor concert in a park. We brought in a band, and I think I might have sung with a few musicians. And out there in the park, this guy came up to me, and I'm saying this like 10 years later, and he said, do you remember Turning Point in Andover, Massachusetts? I said, of course I do. It's a wonderful place. And he said, do you remember one night you were singing? He told the whole story. There was a guy with a harmonica, and he made a big scene. I said, yeah, I remember that. He said, I want you to know that I was that guy, and I later came to Jesus. And I want to tell you face to face that even though I made a scene, what you planted in my heart later bore fruit. So that was a great encouragement. And I'm sure there are going to be many, many people in heaven that are going to rise up and call your mom and your dad blessed for all the things they did.
Definitely. So you have a bat story and a harmonica story. There you go.
That's right. All right. Yeah, and they tell the same thing. You plant the seeds and you think it was a failure, and later on you find out something great happened.
Yeah.
Now, let me ask you one other thing.
this has nothing to do with the kingdom of God, but every time I see you, I always think of the time that, of course, you had two older brothers,
yes,
an older sister, and two younger sisters.
Yes.
And you were the youngest of the brothers, of course. And
yes.
They would tease you, and they would play tricks on you. And so they were teasing you, and they were up in the, tell me the story. They were up in the attic, right?
Oh, geez, yeah. Yep.
And the door was open, and one of these fold-down doors, and you were on the ground, and they were teasing you from up in the attic, right?
Yep.
So tell me what happened.
Well, actually, yeah, they're teasing, and they were something, and actually, the door was down, and they had gone up into the attic. I wasn't sure if they were there, but I was pretty sure. I mean, I was 99% certain. So I yell up, "Hey, are you guys up there? Because I'm going to close the door if you don't tell me you're up there, because there's no way I'm walking up those stairs because I know they'd do something to me." So I said, "You got two more chances here. I'm going to close the door. You got one more chance." They said nothing, and I closed the door. And on them. Well, the bad thing that happened is my brother Phil, who's just older than me, wants to get the door down, so he stands on it. Well, the problem is, when you stand on a door that's in the attic, it opens, and he comes flying out, hits the ground, and actually, like, ruptures his spleen. Rushed to the hospital. I wasn't sure if they did surgery or not, but he was there for a couple of days. And, of course, yeah, I'm feeling bad, but the funny thing is, I didn't get in trouble. My parents were like, "Yep, he was teasing you again."
I didn't know he stood on it. I thought they sat on it, but he stood in it.
He catapulted
him across.
He just came flying out of the attic onto the to the ground. And the part of the story, which it's funny. My brother Bill came and told me. He says, "Jim, this is a terrible thing to say, but he's standing on the door, and all of a sudden he like disappears." And he goes, "I thought that was hilarious." No, until he was hurt. So my brother. Bill was in the attic watching this, and it was really weird. I started cracking up. I was like, "Ooh, he's hurt."
Saw him fly through the air.
Because Bill was up with the attic with him, and he goes, "It's like Phil was there, and then he was gone." He just, boom, the door opened.
I always think of that every time I see you guys. Jim Watson shared the secret of his parents' success at reaching many young people for Christ in the early and mid-1970s at their coffee house, The Turning Point.
And I think something that really was effective, which it's impacted all of us in one way or another, and I know it's impacted me and my wife, is the difference is my parents really able to reach a lot of these kids is they invested in their life. They poured into these kids' lives. I mean, they would show up at our house, and my parents would feed them. They talked about Christ. They'd love on them. No matter how messed up they were, they were going to love on them.
Yes.
And open their house. And my wife and I, we've opened our house to many people. We've had people stay with us.
Yeah.
And I know the impact goes back to Turning Point of watching my parents love on these people. And if you can understand what they're saying, where they're coming from, and love them, you're going to get through.
Well, that's
not
right.
Everyone, but most of them. You're going to make an impact. You're
absolutely
going to make an impact. And I really watched my parents do that with Turning Point. The Turning Point itself, that is usually Saturday, was a great time, but I was able to see the behind the scenes when they were in our house and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Watch my parents really work with people and help them.
Well, I enjoyed watching your house that week too. Well, hey, thanks for talking to me, and I hope you can, if you get a hold of your dad, I want to go see him next time I'm up in Massachusetts, but I hope he'll listen to this podcast. I think he'll be really encouraged. Here's an old song I'm sure my group, the Fishermen, sang at the Turning Point Coffee House back in the day. It's called Carry On.
Carry on, carry on, carry on. To my brothers and my sisters who are facing persecution and are spending time in prison for the things the Lord has done. When they kick you and they beat you, no matter how they treat you, we'll be praying that the Lord will give you strength to carry on,
carry on,
Students on the campus who are speaking out for Jesus, when the winds of opposition swirl around you day by day, even if you're mocked and hated, don't you be intimidated. There's a great reward that's waiting if you'll only carry on, carry on. This is not the time to let up, it's the time to lift your head up. When you're sowing tears, you're reaping joy, don't stop. Carry on, carry on, carry on. It won't be long before we gather round God's throne. Carry on, carry on, carry on, carry on. It won't be long before we gather round God's throne. Maybe you're facing great temptation and you need some consolation, 'cause the devil's doing all he can to make you trip and fall. Yes, the devil will accuse you, he'll even try to bruise you, but resist him and he'll flee from you. Get on, carry on, carry on.
My second guest on the show is my friend Barry Noonan, who began attending the services and concerts at Turning Point in Andover, Massachusetts, when he was 13 years old. We reminisce about those great days when the Holy Spirit was moving in a national revival with our generation. I have on the other end of the phone my friend of many, many years, Barry Noonan, who lives in Windham, New Hampshire. And Barry, what we're doing on this podcast this week is we're talking about the rise of Christian coffee houses that happened in the early 70s during the Jesus Movement. I've been reading a book called God's Forever Children, and it's about God's Forever Family, and it's about the Jesus Movement. And one of the things that happened that was a whole brand new development was coffee houses. And so I want to talk to you because you were part of a great coffee house in Andover, Massachusetts. Were you from Andover?
No, I was from the next town over, the town of Wilmington.
Okay. So this place was called Turning Point. It was a storefront. And do you know much of the history of it, when it started? We know that it started with our good friends, Bill and Sandy Watson.
Yes. As you know, Bill was an executive, and he formed a coalition of Christian businessmen that formed a group called Turning Point. They used to call them TP.
TP.
The Turning Point, yeah, TP Committee. And
these gentlemen and I believe some ladies purchased this old laundromat and refurbished it and opened it up to Christian music and Christian Bible studies. And that was in the early, that was in 1972.
Yeah, and, I came there. My group, the Fishermen, came there in 73. I never knew it was a laundromat.
Yeah, it was an old laundromat. And at the time, Bill Watson, the director, worked for Western Electric, and he got these big spools that they used to put wire on that we used as tables. And we just put their, wire spools, big wooden wire spools, and we, would put vinyl over the top, and that's what we used initially, for tables.
That was a cultural thing. I cannot tell you how many coffee houses I sang at that had those wire, those spools. I mean, it was like the trademark of the Jesus movement.
I remember, your group specifically because you had come from Indiana. You were promoted as such,
Yeah, Hoosiers. Although I'm not a Hoosier, I'm a South Carolina hillbilly. But were you part of that ministry from the very first meeting?
No, it was actually my brother. It was actually my brother who introduced me to Christ, and it was through the Coffee House Ministry. But he was involved early on at the very beginning. I didn't come into it for about 2 to 3 months after they had formed,
So how old were you when you walked through those doors?
I was 13, actually.
13. So I met you when you were 14.
Exactly.
Yeah, because we came in the spring of 73, and I think we came more than once, but...
you did.
Can you describe what it looked like when you walked in other than the tables and what a typical meeting was like there?
Well, we basically had Christian artists, local artists, and people traveled through like yourselves. On Friday and Saturday evenings. And it basically, we had this little area that we had for snacks, and we just had the tables out with candles and a little stage area for, musicians to come and share ministry in music. And, those early days, we had, a lot of fresh artists, that... though they were raw in style, they were very anointed, and they, would minister well. And
we were certainly raw in style.
Well,
I like that way you say that, raw in style.
Well, that's, it's just like one of your songs, it goes, "A Real Christian Man," that always stuck with me from way back when, and that's one of the main, songs that I recall from hearing you way back then, and on those Fridays and Saturday nights, you'd have people from the area come in from all over, really, and just sit and listen to them, to the gospel through music. And a lot of folks would actually respond, because at that time, as you know, there was a revival happening,
right?
The Jesus movement. So the Holy Spirit definitely was present, and really people were responding to the message,
Yeah. Now Bill was a Bible teacher too, wasn't he, if I remember right?
Yes, in fact, he was one of the Bible teachers, and another gentleman named Larry Redding. I don't know if you recall him, but they would do on the other nights, Tuesdays or Wednesdays, I believe, we would meet and have a Bible study, and Bill would typically be the teacher for that, and it was a great lesson. In fact, it was interesting, Lawrence, because back then, even though church, it was promoted, it wasn't necessary early on, because the coffee houses just presented an opportunity to hear the gospel, but also to be discipled to a certain extent. You know, church was always encouraged, but it wasn't a criteria. In fact, I hadn't really attended a church for about a year, even after being involved in the coffee house, you know.
Well, what this book says that I read was one of the drawing cards to our generation was that it was an alternative to organized, strict, formal, sacred services, that you could come dressed like you wanted to dress, you could come in sandals, you could wear your hair long, the music wasn't the old-fashioned way. It was a real drawing card, not only to people who weren't church, but really, according to the book, and I know it's true, church kids began to be drawn to the more informal kinds of ways that we did things. So did you have the concerts every Friday and Saturday night?
Yes, and because at the time there was quite a few Christian musicians just wanted to share the, you know, the message. Yeah, there were quite a few different bands. Joshua was a group out of Bridgewater that I recall that was, and they had like an organist.
Yeah, I remember that band. I do.
You know, an organist and singers. And I mean, it was a big group, and they were really anointed. And I guess that was the beauty of it, was that everyone that came, they weren't promoting themselves, but they were promoting the love that God had given them.
Right.
Through the music. You know, just like what inspired the fishermen, you know, you know, it's that draw of the love of God that you guys experienced that caused you to write the music and go ahead and get in a hearse or something?
Oh, yeah, we had a hearse. I think by the time we got to you, we had a van, but yeah, we had a hearse there for and we wrote on the back, I am the resurrection and the life. But, yeah, there was a passion, I think, that everybody had. We weren't nearly as polished and professional, but we had the passion down pretty well. And we wanted to win people to the Lord. I think some of it later became praise and worship, which is wonderful. Mm-hmm. But like I told somebody the other day, the last words that Jesus said was to go out and try to be witnesses and bring people to Him, and that was what went on there. So the first time you walked in that door, you came with your brother. Mm-hmm. Where did you come willingly, or did he pressure you to come?
It actually started, Lawrence. You know, and this I think was the draw early on. Was there, you know. We were coming out of the 60s, the hippie movement, and, you know, a drug, you know, era, you know, and my brother was actually involved with a group of kids. Well, they were young adults, but hippies.
Yeah.
You know, into drugs and stuff. And the man, Larry Redding, I mentioned, actually had been out in California. I'll make this brief. But he got saved out in California and came out and went into this group of guys that were, you know, doing drugs and stuff, and just told them about Jesus. And from that group, the core of that group, they all got saved. And they began having Bible studies at my mother opened our house to the Bible studies there. And from there, Turning Point opened up.
Wow.
With that group of people, you know, with Bill Watson and that group of people.
So I got two questions. He came from California.
Mm-hmm.
How did he find your brother's group? You said he just walked into them.
He was actually, you know, he was originally from Wilmington, and he had gone out there, and he visited like some sort of Jesus commune and was saved. And he had a connection with Bill Watson. I don't remember the initial connection, but he did. And that's how they got the group to come over and have Bible studies there and then over at Turning Point. And, you know, back then, Lawrence, you know, if you if you didn't have a, you know, if you weren't a guitarist or you weren't preaching, you weren't a Christian, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Everybody had a guitar.
Everybody had a guitar, no matter.
And I'm going to tell you something. We used to laugh because we thought, we thought if you were a Christian in New England, you had to have a guitar and you also had to smoke cigarettes.
Yeah.
Almost all the Christians there.
We
went to a youth group in Worcester one time, and the whole youth group pulled out their cigarettes and were smoking while we were singing. But so, okay, you knew your brother was into drugs when you were 13?
Yes, yeah. Okay. He's the one who got saved. It was radical for him. And he just asked me the basic question, if I knew why Christ sat on the cross, and I didn't, even though I was brought up Catholic. And through those home Bible studies, I attended and learned about Christ. And then, you know, on March 17th, 1973, is when I actually bent my knees and accepted the Lord and attended that very evening. The group Joshua I mentioned was playing at the coffee house. And
yeah.
They had an altar call. And I, even though I prayed early, I did go up. And that was the first time I felt the Holy Spirit. You know.
Wow. So let me back up here. I'm learning things about you I didn't know. Your mother was a Catholic, right?
Yes. Yeah. We were brought up Catholic.
And yet she opened up her home to a non-denominational Bible study?
Yeah, because of the transformation she saw in my brother. Because, you know, he was one of the one, you know, the rest of the family was pretty good, but he was the one that kind of went off a little bit and heavily into the drugs, and you know, but he got saved.
Yeah. Is this the brother I know? Is this the brother I know?
No. Well, you may have, because I actually had a few brothers that attended.
Yeah.
His name was Stephen, but he unfortunately passed away a number of years ago.
Yeah.
But early on, he was the vessel God used to bring me along, and then many others that attended the coffee house, because Turning Point opened in October of 72, and they closed in 78. There was about a 6-year period that they were in operations.
And according to the book I read, that's about the average of most of the Jesus Movement coffee houses.
Really?
Early 70s. But by the end of the 70s, a lot of people had assimilated into churches, and they weren't the big thing that they were. So you got saved at your house.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah, yeah. But again, where I didn't really, you know, sense the Holy Spirit until that night, at, you know, on that evening.
So when you walked through those doors and this band was playing, was your first impression, this is freaky, or were you attracted to it, or?
As you know, I'm musical, you're musical, so I've always had an appeal to music, and I always enjoyed the live music, you know?
Yeah. You're a wonderful singer, by the way. I've already told you that privately many times.
Right.
But, and we've had the privilege of singing the Anchor Holes together more than once.
That's right. The pleasure has been all mine too. You've
sung me under the table. It's like Beauty and the Beast. You're the beauty. You have a smooth voice.
But so you know, I loved it. I loved the live music. I loved the testimony of the people. And, you know, I was young too, and that was the other piece of it, that Bill Watson was such an influence, because really, you know, a lot of these new converts were hippies and drug addicts. And so, you know, I was more on the younger side of that group.
Yeah.
But Bill still encouraged me to still come and made me feel a part. And even those guys made me feel a part too.
Yes.
You know, so it kind of broke down the age barriers.
Absolutely. You know? I remember you were just one of the, I don't think anybody, including us, looked down on you as, you know, not important. You let your hair grow out just like the big guys do, right?
Right. Well, so, plus, since I picked up the guitar myself, and I sat at least doing some of the, you know, leading the worship during the Bible study time, so I kind of assimilated in that way, you know. But still, I mean, it was the love of God. I mean, that's what sustained, you know, myself and my faith. I'm always grateful to Bill for his sacrifice, him and Sandy, because they did have six young children. And as I know at some point you hope to get one of his sons on your podcast, and that would be great.
Oh, yeah. I'd like to get them all on there. I keep in touch with all of them because we stayed at their house, slept in the kids' bedrooms, and I don't know where they slept, but that's a wonderful family. And I saw Bill a few years ago. He's in a nursing home.
He is, yeah.
And we had a wonderful visit together. I know that you went through a terrible tragedy. Your wife, wonderful lady. I remember she had us over for a meal. She died of cancer at an early age. How old was she when she died?
She was 53.
Actually.
Yeah.
And then you went through that long, dark night, but God brought you a wonderful second wife, and you told me that you've been married 3 years now.
Yes, and she's also widowed. She had lost her husband a couple of years prior. I mean, from when I met her. I had lost Marianne earlier, but she lost. But, yeah, no, God just brought us together, and through our marriage experience the first time around, we've learned— And we've also grown to love each other, and she's got a strong faith, just like Marianne.
Yeah.
And Marianne had, and you know, it's just great to be equally yoked. I did go through a period where I dated someone who wasn't as strong as a Christian, I guess you could say, and we weren't really equally yoked, and it was a very frustrating kind of relationship that I had for a period of a couple of years. But, you know, thank God I got through that period and, you know, met Trisha. And like I said, it's been a blessing since, you know, you learn to appreciate the days better. Because when you lose a spouse, you know, you realize those plans that you made are not going to happen. And, you know, the golden years, as they say, you know, but, you know, through it. Lawrence, you know, you talk about your song there, the anchor hold, right? And that's the reality of it, is that anchor of faith that God, you know, anchored in me and in Marianne and her passing was ever so strong in that storm, though my world was falling apart. I've had visions.
slip right through. Like they were only grains of sand. Now I have been young, I am older now. There has been beauty these eyes have seen. The ship is battered, the anchor holds, though the sails are torn. I have fallen on my knees as I face the raging sea. The anchor holds in spite of the storm. I have fallen down on my knees. I have faced the raging seas. The anchor holds.
Thanks for listening to our show today. It's been great these last 2 weeks looking back at two different coffee houses that God used in the early 1970s. I want to end this conversation with the tail end of the conversation I had last week with Wayne Simstrott from Bloomington, Indiana. We talk about the revival that we experienced and of our desire to see God do something like this in the current generation. It just hit me the other day that we got into worship, we got into teaching, but somewhere along the line, this fire to tell the world about Jesus and to win the world to him, it just isn't there now like it was.
That is correct. It's heartbreaking to me, actually, and how I long and wish that the younger generations that we see would know and experience that kind of fire, that kind of dedication, that kind of tenderness toward the Lord and his ways. It is sad to me. And I pray for them to experience that kind of a spirit of the 70s that was just amazing.
Absolutely. I was talking to somebody of a different generation, a younger generation, a while back. And this person was saying, I hear so much about Asbury and revival in the 70s. Yep. And what I want to say to everybody, and of course we do this a lot on this show, it's not a nostalgia thing. Mm-hmm. It's not, let's relive the good old days. It's the fact that there was a national revival that overtook a whole generation.
Yes.
And I just want these generations, our children and our grandchildren, that generation, to experience the Jesus Jesus. Not, I mean, we can have church growth. We've had church growth, but that's not the same as that sweet, sweet revival spirit. It's just not the
same. It was a spontaneous moving, Lawrence, that was just everywhere. We didn't even have to know other groups or other things for us to experience that. And we found out later that it was happening everywhere in America.
Yeah.
That this was springing up like this everywhere.
Yeah, sure was.
Yeah.
Well, any final words of wisdom from our former English teacher?
Oh, not really. I just am so thankful to be able to share with you for a few minutes about all that the Lord was doing. But it was definitely a focus on the Lord. And I believe that valuable seeds were sown during that time that still, years later, Lawrence, you have gone on to other ministry and national recognition at times. Others that I know of have gone on to other different fields of ministry and pastoring churches and leading groups of people. And myself, I ended up being called to the mission field and was involved in India for over 28 years.
Yeah.
And it's like these seeds that were sown during that time are springing up unknown to us everywhere in the world. And I'm just so grateful for it. Salvation
your righteousness rain down. Let your holiness abound. Let the people know your truth. Let salvation